It's Wednesday, February 6, 2013, and you're listening to episode 290 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 55 minutes.
Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Pat.
My name is Julia.
My name is Chad.
And my name is Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chad. Chad, it's been a while since we've last actually spoken to each other. How are things?
Yes, they're going good. How are
Excellent.
You?
Excellent. I'm doing pretty well, actually.
Still flexing and thrusting and
squatting
and whatever else it is you do.
Squatting, what? Flexing, thrusting, stretching, doing all of those things.
Chris,
getting ready for actually, by the time this episode drops, we'll be in the midst of February Sweeps Passion at the station.
I thought it's squats, thrust, and it's like, and by the time it drops, I'm going to be on my throws routine. What?
Probably.
So, Chris, I got a workout thing I've got to complain about. It's about a concept within working out. You can't, like, bitch at a concept, so I'm going to have to bitch at you.
And this would be different from
yesterday because I didn't talk to you. So I was looking up some workout stuff, and I'm going to say this is because I was interested in the exercise, not because I was link wandering off of a really hot fitness model.
Mm-hmm. Happens
Susanna Light. But I came across an exercise that apparently combines
Kegels.
Mouth Kegels. Are you doing your man Kegels, Dan?
A squat.
I do.
Meagles.
It combines. This is serious business, people.
Kegels are serious business.
Dan's talking. This is serious.
This combines a squat with a push-up, which to me seems like, you know, kind of the one-stop shop of exercising. Why the hell did they have to call this a burpee? Could they not have come up with any better name than a burpee?
Actually, they do have another name. I mean, the burpee is what it's more commonly known by, but there's
this
also,
why I don't exercise.
Also known, and
I'm
it
fat
all depends
happy.
On where you want to come from on this one, but it's also known as the squat thrust.
I wonder what you're talking about because I'm trying to envision a squat and a push-up.
So,
what
know,
you do
know,
squat
so
thrust, I know
yeah.
I hate
stand
those
up.
Things.
I love them.
You stand up.
You go down to your
you squat.
Your hand, yeah.
Then from the squat, you kind of drop into a push-up. You do a push-up. You stand back up.
Oh, no, that's not a squat thrust.
And you almost like
that's not what I've
you
heard.
Almost like jump back to a standing position.
Well, so what you really are supposed to do when you come back up from that, you are supposed to jump.
Yeah, you jump.
And when we do those
in
my class, actually, I encourage them to really try and explode as they jump up because it triggers.
He does.
I mean, it's a very good explosive training technique, and it does help to actually
build
up.
Laughing. It's serious business.
You know, your leg muscles.
Yeah, but like I said, you stand up, you drop down into a push-up, you do the push-up, you kind of squat up, and then you jump.
Yeah, see, the one I'm talking about, though, is...
But it's called a damn burpee.
A burpee.
But I mean,
now,
yes.
I don't know
who was sitting down naming this and thought...
It's probably come up by some orthopedic surgeon or whatever named Dr. Burpee.
Well, it's the same thing as a running exercise fartleks.
Like, fart?
Yes.
Yeah, those are bad.
I used to be a runner. What the hell is a fart?
Oh, that's where you've got five people in a line and you're jogging and the guy in the back sprints to the front and then the next one. So it's, yeah, that's the fart. Like, I can hate fartleks. They're horrible.
See, what's funny is I used to run track. I used to be a runner. And Jackie Joyner Kersey, I contacted her because I have asthma so bad. And that's what she told me to do. And I'm like, what?
Do fartleks?
Fartlek. And then I went to my coach.
When I worked at a grocery store as a checker, Jackie Joyner Kersey would come through my line all the time.
Really fast.
Well, not really fast. She always had a friend with her.
And she'd fartlek on you.
Her friend
would jump a fat friend with her that was slow.
Her friend is really loud and ostentatious and jokes around a lot.
Uh-huh.
And her friend and I got along great. We would always just joke around and just basically make fun of Jackie Joyner Kersey.
I actually saw Jackie Joyner Kersey at Maggiano's a month ago. She just happened to be there. I wouldn't even know it, but we went and sit down and like our waiter actually told us, see you right over there? I'm like, it's a black woman. No, it's Jackie Joyner Kersey. I'm like, oh, cool.
It's like the 7 degrees of Jackie Joyner Kersey.
That's true. Yeah, it was kind of neat. Be that close to.
All right.
But do you perform your burpees well? Or do you enjoy doing them? I mean, because they're very good exercise.
Chris, you've had too much time to talk already. Shut up.
Yeah. The short version.
Well,
like
you should talk, Pat.
I like watching Susanna Light do them.
I was gonna say I would do that. Although I like my version where she throws the feedback. The push-up's not gonna do much for me. Although wait a minute, I thought of some interesting sexual position when you first described this.
Okay, Pat. thank you very much.
It can
wow.
be.
Wow.
It Good can night, be. Folks.
If you pick your partner up while you're doing it, absolutely.
I was going to say, a squat combined with a push-up, yeah, I'm there.
Control your show.
Yeah.
And don't control them post, either. Control it now.
Chris, Pat, you're done. That's it. Two announcements, then we've got all kinds of good stuff to talk about. These announcements are good, too.
Just wait till I get to the point where I talk about my little procedure.
No, we're not discussing your little procedure on the
we
show.
We talked about that all Sunday. We're good.
So
we didn't go together. We didn't hold hands. That's first all off, they need to know.
First off, two things with Fear the Con. Actually, three. But two of them are kind of lumped together because they're both being handled by the oh-so-lovely Manaya. First off, Fear the Fruit is still going on. I will put a link to that in the show notes. If you're coming to the convention and would like a healthier food option, or even if you're not going but just want to support what's being done there, because as we've said before, any and all leftover food, which has been plentiful in previous years, gets donated to a local charity. So if it gets eaten at the con, great, somebody ate something healthy. If it doesn't get eaten at the con, it will end up going to something like a homeless shelter or a women's shelter, whatever. We don't just put a dumpster behind the place, so which would be really ignorant if we did that. Like, hey, we've got three pallets of food and hungry locals.
Let's don't throw it out.
But people do dude, that all the that time. That shelter is three blocks away, and I got a truck, but I don't like putting stuff in it. And
yeah, it's not the best neighborhood. The second thing is she's also still doing the Boots the Pegasus t-shirts, which are based on the Boots the Pegasus actual little
Totally
figurine.
Not My Little Pony in any way.
It's stylistically similar is all I will acknowledge. But she is still doing those t-shirts. If you are interested in picking one up, I will post a link on the show notes. She is bringing them to the con. Now, you have to pre-order. She's not, to the best of my knowledge, maybe she is and I'm wrong, but to the best of my knowledge, she's not just like bringing a bunch of them. You need to get a pre-order in that has your size. If you cannot make it to Fear the Con, you are a terrible human being. Mm-hmm. And should
Thank
this point,
you, Dan.
You're welcome.
Flagellate yourself horribly and do burpees.
Did I tell you guys that one of the guys who works for me, he's a brony?
No, but hold that thought, Chris, because that's okay. Completely irrelevant. If you're not going to the convention, you can still get one from her. You'll just have to cover shipping costs and whatnot. Once again, pictures of the pony, links, all that kind of stuff will be in the show notes. The third announcement is that at Fear the Con this year, the ticket prices are going to go up by just a little bit. I wanted to explain that increase because of the fact that one thing that we have prided ourselves on doing with Fear the Con is always running this convention either at or sometimes even below the cost that it takes to host it. And that has not changed this year. The reason there's going to be a slight increase in price, we're going to go up from $40 to $50, is because of the fact that the convention hall where we're going to be hosting the Worldwide Wing Night does not possess a liquor license. So as a result, we cannot bring in a cash bar. We have to buy the kegs and dispense the beer, charging nothing on premise. So in order to cover that expense, we have to up the ticket price just a little bit. So I wanted to explain to you guys, just for sake of transparency, where that money is going and why it's occurring. Just an FYI, and there you go. We look forward to seeing you at Fear the Con. And I think you're still getting a damn good thing for your money because
I haven't paid that little for a convention since the 90s.
Well, yeah, and on top of that, this covers not only both days of gaming. This also covers all of your food and drink at the Wing Night. This covers all of your drinks, beer, soda, whatever, throughout the course of the convention.
And you get to talk to me.
So you said that in the Joker voice. Like me.
But actually, I was going for a handsome Jack.
Can I get
voice.
My money back? If I have to talk to Chad?
You're not paying anything, and you must talk to me anyway.
So, anyway, for that $50, you're not just getting a convention. You're getting free food and drinks at the Wing Night, and then free drinks all throughout the con. And then Stacy will be there, of course, providing food, as always. We have two new vendors that will be joining us this year, but I'm still gathering the details on exactly what they provide. They will not be in competition with Casey, but there will be some.
One sells leather gimp masks. The Aww. Other sells
Chris.
Vinyl.
Chris. But we'll get you more on that probably next episode.
You know what we need? We need a dunking tank for Chris.
Oh, that would be
Like, you throw
fun.
Baseballs at the target and it dunks them into, we can put, like, whipped cream or jello or all something right. horrible in there.
So, Julia, your bard died. Go. I don't know anything about this beyond your bard died. You said the
Chad,
circumstances
I love that
were
idea, by the way.
I do too.
You said the circumstances were dubious.
We were fighting three trolls and we are like level 5. So it was kind of, we were kind of outnumbered. But the deal was
outgunned.
In the encounter, they were up on like a castle wall throwing rocks at us so that we would never get into actual melee with them. So it was, you know, they were only maybe doing 10 damage here or there with rocks. Well, one botched really bad and it fell off of the wall. And me, not thinking clearly, was like, well, since I'm not a caster and I'm like one of the only non-casters, all I could do is hit this dude with my sword. So I just walk up and start hitting on him, forgetting that he has 3 attacks on me. And he just outright murdered her in like one attack. It was awful. So the moral of the story was, don't separate from the party.
Nobody at the table gave you any kind of an assist here. Like, I'm going to walk up to the troll. And nobody at the table's like, wait. Are you sure you want to do that?
You forgot that you were playing a bard clearly. And you thought, wait, I have a weapon. I'll just use it.
Well,
I've got my frying pan. I was just about to say, if Wayne were here to say, you didn't have a frying pan, did you?
Yeah, no. She wasn't.
With that smug grin on his face.
She wasn't.
Because frying pans are awesome.
Oh, geez. She was a daredevil. So, I mean, she did have better melee than some bards do because the archetype allows it. But, nobody else was paying attention to the little bard who gives them
their
buffs.
And your game master didn't give you...
No.
Because, you know, as a game master...
Most people don't pay attention to bards.
People will die. Not characters. People will die in my games. But...
Good to know.
I at least...
I've been gaming with him for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still here.
Chad's playing on hardcore mode, he is still here, so it can be done.
I lost a lung and 3 toes, but I'm still here.
But if someone in one of my games wanted to do something like that, I would at least forewarn them. Okay, if you do this, just in case you're not aware, this is what you're putting yourself up against. Are you sure?
Well, and it didn't
help. I wouldn't stop them.
But you would at least...
I'd at least be kind of like, are you... And, you know, maybe this is just my predisposition because of the fact that, one, I run a lot of homebrews where people don't know. They just don't know what it is they're pissing off sometimes. And then secondly, when I'm not running a homebrew, I run a game for a lot of new gamers where, you know, if I'm playing this game for like my sisters, they're not going to get how powerful Troll is compared to a fifth level character.
To be honest with you, I don't know how powerful Troll is.
You know how they're going to find out how powerful that Troll is?
Dying like me.
Exactly. Tough love, baby. Well, don't pull those punches. Don't puss out on them. Look, they got to learn sometime. That's all I'm saying. Sometimes you got to learn that hard lesson.
So trolls are really powerful?
One of them critted too, which didn't help. That.
Why don't you find out, Chad?
Sure.
You don't need me to hold your hand and tell you not to do something.
I'm not asking you to.
Well, and honestly, I wasn't married to the character
anyway. Maybe I'll be able to talk the troll out of it. You know?
Well, no, because same-sex marriage is not legal in D&D.
What the f*** are we on to now? You know what? We were having a serious conversation a second ago, and now you're talking about the gays.
Gay.
Is this going to be a bonus episode?
It's going to be a kick to the dice bags episode.
You just edit that part out.
Podcast.
It's like, what?
I said I wasn't really married to the character.
Oh, okay.
There was a context to that, Pat. And you had to go there.
Yeah, well, there was context that normal people would get. And then there's Chris. Okay.
Oh,
but anyway, no, honestly, though, so I do find that interesting, though, is because, yes, on the one hand, I think it's very nice and it's very generous to be like that with players that were to make a mistake. But what does everybody think about that? I mean, should the GM always be
I think
nice about it?
Now, there's a difference
because
between,
it can be really forecasted.
I think there's a difference between spoiling, which is there's a little lady who, of course, in D&D is actually the most powerful caster in the world.
Yeah, it is.
You and I tell you, in D&D, there's nothing to be more terrified of than the harmless old person. They're the most powerful caster in the land.
Or
okay?
A single solitary child.
Yes. In the middle of the wilderness. Yeah. That's another one. Run for your damn life.
I've pulled that card a couple of times with my players and freaked them out.
Yeah, I'm not a kid lover, so I'd be like, okay, I don't know how Hansel got here, but he's out here and it's his problem now because for all I know, he's going to turn around and be like the lanternfish dangling temptation on the head of a demon.
Yep.
So I'm gone. But, Pat, I think, one, you don't want to spoil the game if there's a big give. And, two, I'm not going so far as the Magic Rewind to saying, well, it happened, but I'm not going to do it to you. I think it's kind of that middle road of saying, do you understand the risk of what you're about to do? Now, here's the potential reward. I'm switching games right now because I want my other group to also be playtesting Epoch of Rysos for me right now. Mm-hmm. But I've been running Star Trek for them, and after the playtest is over, we're going to go back to Star Trek. Look, in that game, guns don't hurt. They vaporize. Mm-hmm. And so...
You said it wrong.
Vaporize.
Thank you.
They vaporize. Nuclear vessels. But the point being that I have to give these people some kind of understanding. It's like, I'm going to run out and scream at a Nausicaan, and I have to kind of stop and say, okay, do you know what a Nausicaan is? Mm-hmm. This is what they are. This is what they're capable of. This is what he might be armed with. I'm not telling you not to, because – but I just think it's kind of the fairness of when your character ought to know the risk and reward. I, as a game master, feel like I should educate the player in the risk and reward so they can make the decision their character would make.
So is it a case-by-case judgment call? Because if I was playing the game and I am knowledgeable of what's going on and I really should know, and by all rights, you think I should know, and I do something that's kind of stupid, would you do the same thing with me when I really should know better?
Yes, if I was clear on what you wanted to do. Let's say we're playing Battletech, and for anyone who doesn't play Battletech, I'll explain this as we go. But let's say Pat's in a Stinger. All right, it's a very
crappy
small,
light mech with no armor.
Yeah, not armored at all. Its only possible saving grace is speed and maneuverability.
And it's not even that fast.
No, it's not. But let's say, just for a second.
Oh, I think it's pretty fast, on average. Please continue.
It depends on the arrow play as well.
We will wank each other on Battletech
speed
right now.
Okay, fine. Locust.
Oh, shit. Take on anything in a motherfucker. Locust. But that's all I'm saying.
The point being, though,
it's metal.
What's the one? It's an older Mac that goes like 914. I'm blanking out now.
Yeah, No, it's not the Husser.
Why did you use Battletech?
I'm sorry.
Fine.
Oh, no. The Mercury.
The Mercury. The Mercury, right. So let's say you take the Mercury and you say, I'm going to park. I'm not going to move at all. I'm going to park in front of an Atlas. Big old 100-ton gun pack and whoop your
but
ass
Dan,
machine.
I'm small. There's no way he'll be able to hit me.
Here's the thing. If you said to me, and the Atlas is right there, and you said,
modifier, right?
And you said, I'm going to park. I would probably look at you for a moment just to make sure that I heard you right. Uh-huh. Like you weren't joking. You weren't under some kind of misconception like the Atlas had already moved or the Atlas had no forward firing weapons or I don't know what you'd be smoking. But I'm going to kind of look at that. And if you look like you're serious, no, I'm really not going to push the issue because you understand.
Exactly. I do it because know what I'm doing because that Mercury parked for that Atlas is like the single child in the woods to that Atlas. That Atlas is
going
to be like,
on
I don't know what this guy's doing, but I'm out of here as fast as I can go.
Because when you're in that Mercury, you're going to hit, you're going to get two for hit location, you're going to get center torso possible critical, you're going to get three, you're going to get the engine hits, and that Atlas is gone
exactly.
Like that.
Yep, that's going to happen.
I don't play Battletech.
You know, I do play Battletech, but I'm not really into it like that.
But I guess, and again, so to broaden that a little bit,
For a brand new player,
I can see it, but and maybe like and Julia, who's not a novice to gaming.
Well,
at all.
Did you know what a troll is capable of?
I should have known, honestly, because we've fought them in the past, but I didn't fight them at that low of a level.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't thinking about the fact that, oh, I'm a little level 5. I'm kind of crap compared to the last time I fought him. I think I was 12. You know what I mean? So I still don't think she should have told me because I should have known in the first place. But at the same time, whenever you're playing, and it's a module, when you're playing a module and they...
You've already lost. You go, yeah, you've already lost.
Yeah. We're just playing a module. It's like a, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a module.
You weren't that invested anyway.
Yeah. Well, that and, you know, it's like they do find these intricate ways to let you fight things like this, like putting them on top of a castle and one happened to botch and fall.
Shay and
off.
I have been talking about Skyrim. It's like the start of Skyrim. At the very start was that Alduin or whatever his name is shows up, but you don't fight him. He just kind of rampages around while you interact with plot as he's rampaging around.
Exactly.
So you see this giant creature doing all these terrible things. You are literally at that point in Prisoner's Rise, do not have a single weapon to your
hands
name.
Are bound too.
Yeah, right. You can't even punch. But nonetheless, you're able to interact with it in some sense.
So imagine that for some reason it botches and you have to fight it.
Yeah.
That's
Johan,
what ended up happening.
Well, Johan, I really wish you'd been here for our dinner conversation. You would have loved the Skyrim discussion. I know you would have. I'm sorry you weren't here, buddy.
But yeah, so she died and I was not fully invested in her anyway, so I'm okay.
Pat,
I'm creating a rogue.
You should play Skyrim because they have a naked mod.
Actually,
in fact, I recommend the naked mod, and here's why.
I'm sorry, say again,
I'm serious. I recommend the naked mods, and here's why.
Because you're totally lecherous.
Yes.
Because of the fact they have clothed the best bodies in the game. Of
the
all
female body?
Both. There's a naked mod for the males as well. I'm serious about this.
I wouldn't get that one.
The best wireframe and texture mods, in my opinion, are the naked mods. Because even when they're wearing full armor, they look significantly better
than
the base models. Okay. And I went through a couple different models, and what I found was one of the naked mods in particular, I thought looked head and shoulders better than any of the other.
Just the head and shoulders?
Just the head and shoulders.
Oh, okay.
Looked better than any of the other. Now, of course, you have to accept that when you kill somebody, there's either boobs or a penis sticking out at you. But
put that sword away. I already killed you.
You suddenly start
deal with that.
You start being a little more picky about who you loot the armor off of. But nonetheless. But no, I mean, I'm serious. In my opinion, I think they by far have the best body models in the
Good
game.
Good to know.
Now, the one I used to upgrade the heads of the elves, that has nothing to do with nudity. That was a pure standalone. Make the elves not look like triangle faces.
Mm. Yeah, that's
and
true.
That's all it changed in the game. But I have not found a good hair mod yet. They all look like crap.
I know.
There's a game for you. It's called
Johan,
Sims.
You're welcome.
And you know what? I love right. Sims.
So let's,
I want to just mess around with hair.
I want to spin off a topic we were talking about last time. And this is going to start with a kind of general geek subject. It is going toward role-playing.
Naked mods in video games?
Naked mods in video games.
Okay. I'm on board.
But this is going to start with a geek topic that's not role-playing related, but will tie into a role-playing game. So we talked last time about John creating his Shadowrun character. And one of the things that I had told John was that I, for a long time, had believed he would like Shadowrun if he played it. And I was talking to Chad tonight, and I said part of the reason for that is because of the fact that Shadowrun, in my opinion, is really a game that is about trust. It's about the clash of what happens when the private good and the public good become interchangeable, especially at the corporate level. When the U.S. government decides, or any government decides, that the corporation's well-being is part of the public good. And I'm not going to start a political discussion here, so...
Too late!
Well, I realize we could spin this off into all kinds of relevant topics.
Oh, my God, there are people who heard you say that, and they got out of their car and flipped their car over.
I know, but the point being, I'm just talking about Shadowrun. Whatever it is you've read in the headlines over the past, I don't care how many years, it's irrelevant, I don't want to hear it.
We're talking dragons, we're talking orcs.
In fact, John told me one of the things he found most fascinating was a particular bit of case law from Shadowrun's history, and I don't remember the name of the exact case, but it was where a group of workers in New York were on strike, and a truck attempted to cross by their picket lines, and they thought it was carrying like food or something, and so they tried to attack it, but it was actually carrying this extremely hazardous material, and so the corporate security started shooting into the crowd and killed a whole bunch of people. When it went to court, the courts came down on this corporation and said, no, this was negligent homicide and all this other stuff. But on appeal, they got it thrown out because they said, look, if they hadn't shot these people, then this hazardous material would have been released. All these people would have died. Therefore, them protecting their corporate interests is interchangeable with the public good. And so it started this kind of slippery slope that leads down into the world of Shadowrun. And I said, you know, John, I think part of the problem with Shadowrun is the way RPG art is done. And this is a huge topic that I'd like to tackle, but I'd like to tackle probably grabbing somebody like Jared Owen or Keith Curtis or one of our friends who does RPG art about how art in most RPGs is done in a vacuum. A lot of times they don't know the setting they're drawing for. They don't know much about it. They know it at all. The layout is not done with the art in mind. It's just kind of stuffed in wherever. And so when somebody gets the art for Shadowrun, they're like, well, what looks visually compelling? I'll draw an elf with a laser cannon. Somebody like Chad or John sees the genre mashup. They love Neuromancer. They have an aneurysm and they hate the game. And I get that.
So many aneurysms.
And I get that because of the fact that this is the way the game sells itself. But it's ultimately, in my mind, not what the game is about.
To me, Shadowrun, it takes a concept like Cyberpunk And cyberpunk is not necessarily accessible to everybody, especially if you're talking back in the 80s, mm-hmm. when it was a newer concept.
Right, and cyberpunk's where I'm going with this, but please go on.
Yeah, you know, it was a newer concept. It involved a lot of computers, and again, back in the 80s, computers, big shock to young people, were not quite as ubiquitous as they are today.
Almost nobody had them.
Yeah, nobody had.
Not everybody had a computer in my class in the 90s.
There were people in the 80s who didn't have an electronic component in their house other than like a toaster or a microwave or an alarm clock.
Yeah, maybe a digital watch.
Yeah. So the cyberpunk elements that involved computers, AI, integrating electronic components into you as far as cyberware and that sort of thing, the concepts were not that accessible to a lot of people, especially if those people didn't read a lot of science fiction or weren't into computers or weren't into stuff. Again, in the early 80s.
Right. And that was one of the traits of cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Is that cyberpunk, I think, only worked as a genre for a couple of decades.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And the reason that I say this, and Chad, this was the conversation we had at dinner, but I want to let the listeners know kind of how we arrived at this, is throughout the 80s in particular, and probably a little bit before and a little bit after, but the 80s in particular, we knew that we sat on the cusp. By we, I mean the human race, seemed to know that we sat on the cusp of a major change. Even the most casual observer knew that computers were going to become a bigger part of life. Interconnectedness was going to become a bigger part of our life. While things like the internet had certainly not broken through to the mainstream, they existed. We saw America with kind of a struggling economy as we flipped from an industrial to an information-based economy. And nobody was sure what that would mean. You saw people losing their jobs left and right to robots and computer programs and things that improved efficiency. Japan was really on this skyrocket economically. The Cold War was in its last days. And so people knew that the world in 10, 20 years was going to be a very, very different place. But they didn't know what that world would look like. And it was kind of a frightening sense.
Lived it.
Yeah. So I think with the possible exception of Julia, all of us have a pretty good memory of this. And Julia, you may remember this to some degree.
That was that was my teenage years, man.
Yeah. For me, this would have been childhood, maybe, I guess, real early teens. But the point being that it's well within the ages where I had a full recollection of my life. And that left a lot of fear. And cyberpunk was able to come in. And I don't say exploit the fear, because that sounds so horrible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it did.
But it spoke to the fears. Fear, yeah. It spoke to the fears.
Yeah.
It said, look, imagine a future where everybody knows everything about you. Your brain is plugged into a computer. The Japanese economy has eclipsed the U.S. economy, which has now gone into complete and utter collapse. The Cold War is over. Corporations are on the rise in a way that is completely without historical precedent. And this is the story they told. But we sit in that future now. That future occurred. We are now in that future. We have that interconnectedness. Japan, instead of shooting past us, went through an economic collapse and is still a very big economy. But the U.S. remains at the top of the heap with the largest GDP in the world. Depending on exactly which statistic you look at, by a fairly large margin as well. The Cold War is over. It's been replaced now by something that the people who wrote cyberpunk really didn't quite predict, which is kind of an ideological war between, I mean, we'll just, for simplicity's sake, we'll call it the War on Terror. I don't want to.
This is the most politically charged episode of FTV ever.
I just
that's Shadowrun.
Keep going so no one else can jump in there. So you are maintaining control and direction of the conversation.
All right, but the point
it's a good thing this time.
Right, but the point here being, though,
just so you can preach your ideological views on everyone,
shove it down our collective throats.
Just so I can hear and talk about Pat's homophobia and my Islamophobia. But no, seriously, though, but the point being, though, that we sit on the opposite side of that. Okay, so here I'll pause and let you guys talk.
What I was saying before you so rudely interrupted with all this great history about cyberpunk and all that. For me, the way I view Shadowrun, again, cyberpunk was not very accessible to a lot of people, was to certain people if they were reading the right kind of books or into the right kind of sci-fi. But because it added elements of fantasy to it, it was accessible to everybody. Everybody understands Tolkien and D&D and elves and orcs and that sort of thing. So it was an entry into this science fiction genre through a door of fantasy. And that's the way I see it. Well, and as a big fan of the particular science fiction genre that it was portraying, I feel it adulterated it. But that's what it was trying to do.
Right,
that's what its goal was.
And it was, but I still feel like, you know, and I talked about this too, even with John, whenever I was telling him he should make a Shadowrun character with us, but the dragons and all the fantasy in it is very, it's not nearly as in your face as people think
it is. It's played up in the presentation.
It is.
The art implies it is a lot more in your face than it really is in the game.
I mean, they just are like heads of corporations, but you never actually see them, the dragons. You don't actually see them come out and fly around and blow fire on people.
Well, and in a way, they become sort of a metaphor that I think maintains a fear that was lost when we actually entered the information age, which is a fear of the uncontrollable and the unknown, that now instead of being afraid of the internet because it hit and we're not afraid of it, now instead of being afraid of what a world looks like on the far side of the Cold War because we know what that looks like, now instead of being afraid of being eclipsed by a Japanese economy, which, I mean, I'm not saying it couldn't happen in the future, but is not going to happen tomorrow, you still have that fear of the unknown. But you now deal with that unknown in the sense of there are magical powers that might be manipulating the situation, in addition to the technological and legal constructs that are creating problems for you day in and day out. You deal with issues of racism, but it gets easier because of the fact that you're not talking about whites and blacks and Asians and whatever. You're talking about elves and orcs. And
that's what Shadowrun was really about to me. It was a safe way to explore issues of racism without getting into actual skin color differences, as well as a couple other things. And I don't disagree with what you're saying, but that was a predominant theme that came over to me as I would read the fiction and go through the supplement books and all that, was that it really had a lot to do with issues about racism.
I always hated that because I had a party member that took, equality? What do they call the other one?
What, the Humanist Poly Club?
What?
The Humanist Pulse or Humanist Poly or Irish Trance Club. There's like a KKK for...
Yeah, they were the Shadowrun KKK.
Well, no, yeah. I'm talking... There's like good qualities, bad qualities. And one of our party members took a bad quality that made him hate humans. And he was an orc. And it just made it really hard.
That must be relatively new, because in first through third editions, I only remember the metahumans having allergies.
Yep.
You wanted to buy back some build points on a metahuman, you did it through allergies. That you had a severe aversion to... cold iron or whatever.
Plastic or something like that, yeah.
Grass or...
bear.
Cats.
Somebody who had was allergic to the sun and didn't tell anybody.
Wow.
He just like snuck it in for build points, and the GM was like, wait, you're allergic to sun? I don't know. Probably.
So where are you getting at with Shadow?
So here's where I'm going
with
this.
What's the punchline? Okay, so, other than selling more Shadowrun books.
I think this was all interesting conversation along the way, and I think each of these ideas is interesting enough probably to merit its own discussion. But the gaming topic that I think this led into is one of the other reasons I think that Shadowrun has held on when the vast majority of cyberpunk has disappeared from the popular imagination. Things like Neuromancer, Johnny Mnemonic, whatever, some of the work of Philip K. Dick, a lot of this stuff is now in the past. And the reason I think Shadowrun stuck around is because role-playing games have a very unique quality. Most entertainment is disposable. There's a reason that we refer to ourselves as consumers. You consume it, and it's gone. You watch a movie, you've seen the movie. It's over. This movie is not going to tell you anything more once you have reached the end of the DVD. A book is the same way. Once you reach the last word of the last page, it's over. I mean, there might be a sequel or something. The point is the book is done. Neuromancer has a finish. But role-playing games seem unique among most forms of entertainment in that they maintain a sort of persistence because you can't exhaust them. Even if I took out a book that showed its age in every regard, that dealt with the Red Menace and the future fears of where technology might take us and so on and so forth, I can still tell stories in that.
Red Dawn?
Sure. Red Dawn Punk.
I would play that.
Wolverine Punk, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can still take that story and you can keep working with it because of the fact that, unlike every other form of entertainment, it's not disposable. It's just a framework for creating stories of your own. As long as you're willing to buy into its premise, you know, the basic boundaries of the world that they have created, you're never done with it. You can't reach the end of it. And I guess I have several places I'd like to go with the subject, but let me start with this question. Have you guys ever played a game that felt dated and didn't bother you to do it?
Like a role-playing game?
Yeah, a role-playing game. Talking about role-playing. Have you ever played a role-playing game?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I mean, just the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is kind of an old, gone concept.
I guess. But
if you played it today and a GM created a brand new story, would you still enjoy it?
Yeah, I will say we play a Neuromancer game, and we have the scene where there's payphones ringing down a wall. Mm-hmm. Who the hell has a payphone?
Yeah.
All she could do is annoy the shit out of him on his cell phone.
Like, would you run a cyberpunk game with future 1980s technology?
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah, I would. That'd be an awesome way.
Does it bother you, though? Does it pull you out of...
Not retro gaming. It would be like a retro story. Yeah. I think it'd be pretty... You could do some pretty cool stuff with that.
Well, to me, the interesting thing about that question is you're talking about near future type gaming. Back in the 80s,
I mean, you could play a Western.
Near future stuff. Well, that's the thing. You can play Westerns, you play fantasy, or you play futuristic sci-fi, and this never comes into it. Well, because you're talking about the distant past or the distant future. So you're not stepping on things. But if you start playing modern games or near future, I'm talking a decade ahead of where we are right now type of a game, then in 10 years, yeah, it becomes dated. So you have a small sort of window of where this is going to be an issue.
Sure, because unless you're really into history, the distant past might as well be fiction. I mean, okay, it happened, but beyond that, we don't really tend to know a lot of the nuances about it.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll play a Western or a fantasy game any day of the week, and it won't feel dated because there's no frame of reference for me and data for that.
And on top of that, it's dating as part of the intended telling of it.
Yes.
It's not like when somebody sat down to write Deadlands, it was in the middle of the 1870s.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's the thing. It's like you play a fantasy or you play a Western. Are you playing a historical medieval game? Or are you playing a fantasy?
Right.
Are you playing a historical 1850s game where cowboys were uneducated and illiterate? You didn't have gunfights at the OK Corral. You got drunk over a poker game and blasted somebody with a shotgun. Mm. Or you're trying to survive out in the wilderness. I mean, it's a Western is a fantasy. Like John Wayne Westerns, total fantasy. That didn't happen.
I never played Shadowrun, Cyberpunk, or any of that. I totally skipped over that, and I still to this day have not played any. I've never had this issue because I haven't played the games that we're talking about that can be dated.
That's what's going to be my question, is every game you played, at least that you can recall, been either so far past or so far future,
or
so
present.
Wildly an or, alternate Earth, Dresden.
Or I played a modern day game. Like I did play a game that was basically sort of an X-Files type of a feel game, and it was set in modern day Springfield, Missouri, which is where I lived at the time. I don't even count that because it was not near future. It was
You're basing off today. Events right
this
now.
Is what we have right now. So for me, that's always going to change. Like if I were to go back to that game, I wouldn't go back to that game and play it in 1992. I would play it in 2013 because I'm not playing a game that's supposed to be.
I would actually
near future.
I would actually play that game. Say I were you and we had an opportunity to go back to revisit the game. I would totally play it in 1992.
Well, I would too because it wouldn't. And again, to me, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. It's like it's back in the 90s now. I lived through it. I know what was then.
There's a movie called.
But what if you didn't know what was then? Because, for example, this thing that I was talking about with John, that case law in New York, that occurred in 1998 and 1999. That's when, according to the timeline, that case occurred.
Okay.
That occurred, we're talking somewhere in the neighborhood, of almost 15 years ago. So if we sat down to play Shadowrun, you can't tell me what happened in the 90s. You have to relearn what occurred in the 90s. Yep. The Japanese are the most dominant economy on the face of the earth. That occurred not in 2030. That occurred in the 1990s.
Yeah, and then the Indians rose up in the mid-90s and took back a lot of America.
Mm-hmm. And so these are things that you would have to accept. Would that bug you? Would that bug you to play something that felt wrong because you had been there? Or does gaming is
all there's dragons.
For me, that wouldn't bother me because when you sit down in a movie, even though it's not it's a work of fiction and it might take place in a certain era, there's a suspension of disbelief that you're willing to commit to. And the same is true when you sit down to do a game. You know, there's those parameters that are kind of set out there and you're willing to suspend your disbelief that whether this was real for this time period or not, that at least for me anyway, I'm okay with, and I'll work within those parameters.
It's like watching a Godzilla movie. Watch a Godzilla movie, and suddenly a guy goes flying across the screen, and he's got a rocket belt. And he's flying on a rocket belt. And you're like, That's ridiculous. There's no way a freaking rocket belt could work and not like that. And that's the silliest thing I've ever seen. Wait a minute.
There's
a giant 50-foot tall freaking lizard smashing Tokyo, breathing atomic fire. And you've got a problem with the rocket belt.
Yeah, well,
okay. Okay, just so long as we set that bar.
A James Bond. That's closer to reality, yet still, you know, wait a minute. How can you get a laser in that watch? That's impossible.
I find a lot of Bond films ridiculous. I can't watch. Well, I mean, I can't.
I couldn't quote you the movie, but there was a movie from the 50s or 60s. It's one of the classic sci-fi movies, and I've now suddenly forgotten its name.
Man of Sense.
Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Where the Earth is becoming uninhabitable, and so they take a rocket ship full of humanity's best, and they send them to live on Mars. And they land on Mars. It's got, like, a breathable atmosphere and all this kind of stuff.
And Santa Claus.
And they got there in a rocket ship.
Seen that one, too.
The point being that the movie, while its premise was the human race is dying off, it wasn't this wildly... You didn't have a giant lizard running around breathing atomic fire.
Which is awesome.
Which, mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine.
Although I'm more of a Gamera fan.
But the point is, it kind of steeped itself in a lot more plausibility, and then that plausibility kind of starts to break down in the finale of the movie. And now I can accept that. I can sit there and watch it and take it for what it is, saying, well, okay, it was written in such and such decade and they really didn't know. And so that's just kind of the premise of the movie. But I'm curious if what's different about a role-playing game is even if the role-playing game was written 30 years ago, because of the fact that, once again, this entertainment has a persistent that most kinds don't. The story I'm telling you was written in 2013.
Doesn't bother me at all. I rack it up to genre, good story. I can roll with it. Well, a lot of stuff like that. Look at John Connor, the movie. Or the books, whichever. Breathing on Mars, and there's all kind of... I mean, yeah, that's fun stuff you add to it. I think that...
But you know what, by that same token, hold on with that Mars theme, when they redid the Tom Cruise version of War of the Worlds, they glossed over that whole aspect of the invaders coming from Mars. I think because of that, of what you, the question that you're asking, Dan, is that I think that they felt the audience would not be able to suspend their disbelief because we knew so much factually about Mars and what it has and doesn't have.
And they're already suspending their disbelief over his Tom Cruise is acting. So.
Well, exactly. But yeah,
it's a tough hill to climb.
You can only ask so much of your audience. And, you know, Alien Invasion and Tom Cruise acting is enough right there. You don't want to say, oh, they came from Mars, by the way. You know, because then, yeah, they're totally out the window. But I think the question you're asking is valid in certain respects. And I think some people do take that into account.
Yeah, I think that you can get too ridiculous. I mean, what you're asking for is a time shift that kind of creates a certain retro or genre feel. And I think that's cool. I think that you can get too ridiculous to where your eyes just start rolling. And those are a lot of like Johan type games, Confederate dinosaur riders on the moon or whatever the hell he has.
Necromancer. Let's say Neuromancer as an example.
I'd love to. I love that book. Well, I love that series. Let's say, though,
there's a whole story I'm telling where wireless technology doesn't exist. This is something they had to deal with in Shadow of 4th edition.
Yeah, they did Unwired.
They finally introduced a wireless matrix. You don't have to plug your brain into a cyber cafe anymore. You can now do it wirelessly.
Which I felt took away from the game.
And
yeah, you know, they should have kept their retro feel.
Well, no, it's because, like, you know, it's all about breaking in and hacking to get into buildings.
Oh, yeah. A lot of times
you could just do everything you need to from the parking lot.
Oh, yeah. A lot of times you had to break into the
parking lot. Why get that close?
You had to break into the building to break into the network. And now suddenly you're right. That's gone.
They had to make exceptions in first and second edition when you could, because at that time you could get internet service via satellite. And so they had to start allowing for that. And I remember the rules to do that were they made overly complicated. It was almost not worth it to even make the attempt.
Technology is just making us lazy. And it's even in our games, because like you said, at this point, it's wireless. You don't have to go to the building to do it. You don't even have to leave your freaking house. You can have the entire adventure sitting on your couch.
Yeah. You could be Mr. Universe.
You could be
Serenity.
Greg Christopher.
Exactly. Technology equals lazy.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because in one of the Shadowrun short stories, there was a guy that had a weight machine or some kind of like a workout machine that worked out for him.
I would sign up for that.
Like, all totally. He did was he, like, hooked himself up to it.
Yeah.
And it would then, like, send, like, electrical impulses into the muscles to force them to contract. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, we
and
have so, those already, that oh, little was, app thing.
Yeah. Yep. The novel, I think, I think it's 2XS, I think.
And
no, it was a short story collection. I only remember.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah, it was in, this was the one where I think Stackpole did the finale with, and it had like the Halloweeners.
I need that. I need to be able to plug myself into something and go to bed, and then it exercises.
You
want to
know where I saw
that?
You want to know where I saw that exerciser concept first before that?
Shake weight?
The Jetsons. Back yeah. in the 60s, there was one where yeah. George plugged himself into a machine that was moving his arms and moving his legs. And everything was going great until the machine screwed up. And it's like, get me out of here.
Tore
him
limb from limb. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was all Rosie's fault, too. Yeah. She was evil.
Well, when you drop that first law, exactly. Robots kind of go a little weird.
I mean, she had red eyes and everything. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Rosie did have red eyes.
What is the first sign of evil robots?
Red eyes. Yep.
It's true in Transformers.
Exactly. I'm just saying.
What color is Darth Vader's lightsaber?
That's right.
What color are his eyes?
I know.
I mean, come on, people. How obvious can it be?
Looking at the teaser poster for the new Star Wars movie, guy out in the field wearing what appears to be like a Sith robe, but he's holding a blue lightsaber.
He's not evil.
He's not evil at all.
That's why I figured he's either a Jedi or he's a falling Jedi. One of the two.
But he's going to be lost on an island, and it's going to all be weird at the end, so don't worry about it.
So the fake Kickstarter funded.
That was a real risk of falling through.
They just made it.
Yeah, they barely squeaked by. Their goal was like $2,000.
Their goal was $3,000.
$3,000. They raised like half a mil.
$433,355.
Yeah. Okay, so
10,102 backers.
Yeah, okay, so they just squeaked by. Okay.
I think they made one of their comedy stretch goals, too.
That was one that I think was fully funded within like some matter of hours. So yeah,
well, he only set it at 3,000.
Yeah,
that
was not a nail biter. Elite Dangerous was a nail biter. Pathfinder Online was a nail biter. Fate Core was not.
Now, I will
say
that
was just more like a nail picker. Yeah, something you do out of a nervous habit.
That's probably one of the best deals in role playing. If you didn't get on the Fate Kickstarter,
freaking dollar for the rules.
It's like, you either don't like Fate, and I get that, or you missed out on $110 worth of games for $10.
Yeah. I got it at the $30 level.
I did $30.
And, yeah, and so I'll get the print copies of all the stuff, because I even have a tablet, and I still haven't made the jump to ebooks yet. I prefer the pulp copies.
Me too. I have problems reading PDFs, like, actually, in-game.
Oh,
it's hard
PDFs,
for me.
Yeah.
I have to have the physical book.
I'm getting used to, like, the Kindle type.
I have a tablet, and I like it.
That's fine.
Yeah, those... Yeah. Kindles, tablets.
I ran an adventure off a tablet a couple times, and it's actually worked pretty well.
Well, and I started using a tablet now as a game master because of the fact that it's less intrusive than a laptop. So I can have all of my notes on Google Docs, which means I can write them anywhere and load them from anywhere. But when I actually run the games, I started bringing a tablet because I don't have this huge mega laptop blocking my view of everyone.
Dawn and I's house has so many books in it, and I'm sure there's people with tons more, but Dawn and I's house has so many books in it, it's probably a fire hazard.
Oh, ours the same way. Yeah. Most of them aren't up here. They're in boxes downstairs, but yeah, there's another one. It's just kind of a little, I'm just kind of curious what everyone's take is. And we'll close the show out on this very kind of silly little question. Do you think in the future, let me qualify future. Let's say when our...
The year 2000.
Grandkids. Yeah, the distant 80s, when we'll have cities on the moon.
2000.
But let's say maybe like 2050. Do you think books are going to... I mean, I'm sure they'll still be around, but do you think they're going to be common, or do you think pretty much everything's going to be electronic?
They're going to be electronic.
I think most of it's going to be electronic.
I can tell you that Dawn works in a bookstore. She works for Barnes & Noble, and it's ceasing to become a bookstore, and it's becoming a stuff shop.
Yeah.
Gift store.
Yeah. They're closing 20 stores a year.
Well, some of that, though, is because of Amazon, but now... And I haven't checked the statistic in a while. I know as of several years ago... Accepting that this technology is moving very quickly in terms of market penetration, but as of just a couple of years ago, like 90-some-odd% of written material that people purchase was still being done in printed form.
Yeah.
Now, I have no idea where that is today. What was kicking the crap out of Borders and Barnes & Noble isn't the rise of the ebook.
It's how cheap you can get it on Amazon.
It was the fact that you go on Amazon, sitting on your ass, get the book for half the price, and if you're a Prime member, have it delivered to your doorstep for free.
Yeah. Not for free, but yeah.
Yeah, no, if you're paying...
You're paying for Prime,
but yeah, the point is you get unlimited free shipping, two-day shipping at that thereafter. And so it was Amazon's mere existence, even long before...
Ebooks and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Amazon was clobbering them just by its convenience, but I was just curious because it was one of those things where it's like, as I write science fiction or describe science fiction or envision science fiction, one of the things that I always try to picture is, so what would be in somebody's living space?
Books will become a unique Christmas gift. So that's what they'll be. It's like, oh, you got me an actual book.
I think the key to it is that as the generations that are used to books get older and start to die off, then that's going to be sort of the death knell of it, too.
Yeah.
Because right now, you know, we are
like
used
books.
To books.
Yeah.
Well,
but
you guys do.
Children that are born today are going to be seeing more and more non-book things.
Well, you know,
electronics things. And to them, it's
going
to be like, what is this thing? And when they're our age, in 30 years, they're going to be like, I don't need
these
books.
Well, let me give you an example. This has already occurred. As of about, I don't know, maybe a decade ago, there's a huge shift in the way we lived because of the fact that postal mail became a very, very distant second to email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that has caused tremendous changes in the way that we live. That has already happened a second time. Email is now a distant second to SMS, MMS.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the
text messaging.
Yeah, text messaging. For us not familiar, it's text messaging, Twitter. These short messages, you can also SMS or MMS to Facebook. But in Facebook, you can also write longer posts. But these 200-character-ish pings of information, that's how people communicate now.
Yeah. Anybody in the audience listening to this, when was the last time you wrote a physical letter and sent it to somebody? And I'm not talking a birthday card or a Christmas card. I mean, you sat down and wrote down a letter to people.
I was in
camp
in the 80s.
Probably the same here.
2002.
Yeah.
I wrote a letter to my state representative and state senator.
Yeah.
I will not say
your politics.
I know. That's why I will not say over what, because I don't want to dig up the politics.
I might beat you guys. I actually had to, simply because my brother is a former Marine, set up a lot of the communications for Iraq. Mm-hmm. He was there the day the war started. So my first communication with him for the first couple months were letters. But then I started getting emails after that.
We still get him at the TV station. And it is predominantly older viewers. The only time we'll get the young is if it's like some sort of like elementary school tour group that sends in a big like thank you card that they made in class. But you're absolutely right, Pat. I mean, it's older people that still write in letters or send in postcards, you know, complaining about things.
So I think you're going to see changes along those lines. It won't just be books. It will be other things.
Now,
it's going to be a radical change.
Chris guesses just THX-BAI.
Oh, geez. Well, and I just recently went to CES, and just some of the small stuff I saw changing there, it's going to be pretty crazy.
Honestly, I think that the future, not 5 years, but a little past that, is going to be 3D replication printing.
Flying cars, cities on the moon.
Yeah. They already had stuff at CES for it.
Well, I'm sure. But I mean, I'm talking 3D printers that can print out nearly anything that you own in your home currently, and your mother can use it.
Yeah.
Or your grandfather or whoever, some non-technological
person. That will be
interesting
to change the economy because raw materials will become the only true resource.
And to be honest with you, the 3D replicated printers need two jumps to really make it into the home and be ubiquitous. One is they got to get out of the hacker space and into just the everyday use space. It's got to be like the printer that you have at home to print out photos or documents. It has to be that easy to use. And the second thing is materials. Instead of just PVC and whatever the one that's made out of soy or I forget what that's called, but you have to be able to feed all these different kinds of materials in it to make all the different kind of stuff that you need to make a variety of things.
As we close this one out, I'm glad to hear you guys say many of the things that you did, not just speculating about the future, but that you kind of agree with me on the sense of the permanence of RPGs as a form of entertainment because of the fact that so long as you're willing to accept its premise, you can continue telling stories in that space for as long as you have the product, as opposed to something like a book or a movie where once it's done, it's done. In fact, I know there's this whole push right now within gaming calls the old school gaming revival or old school gaming revolution or
old school renaissance.
Yeah, old school renaissance. That's what it is. The old school renaissance. That's not exactly what I'm talking about, because that's more of a push to create new games in kind of an older way or an older feel. Whereas this is more about playing older games as they were written back in the 1980s or whatnot. But anyway, don't forget to check the show notes. Links there for stuff on the Boots t-shirt and also Fear the Fruit, some other stuff. And don't forget to sign up to come out to Fear the Con. We cannot wait to see you guys there. Have a great week of wonderful games, and we will catch you guys next time. See ya.
Dunk tank.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.